Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hey, it's 12:03, midweek Wednesday afternoon, January 29th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The stakes are high as advertisers place big bets on the Super Bowl. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the Federal Reserve is in play today as it wraps up its latest two-day meeting. Joining us with the details is David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors in Denver, Colorado, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. David, thank you for joining us today. And let's try to understand central banking, especially this desire to sit on their hands and do nothing about interest rates. Stan, Pat won't raise them, won't lower them. That's what the consensus is. So all the action, David, is going to be in the news conference when Fed Chair Jay Powell explains his thinking.
All that well said by you. I do not look for any change in Fed policy at this policy meeting, the first being this year, that would keep the Fed's target at 4.25% to 4.5%. I think the Fed will be more cautious in any rate cuts this year, certainly than they were last year when we were at the beginning of the year looking for a number of rate cuts. There are a lot of uncertainties that the Fed has to deal with, not the least of which is President Trump's government spending programs and employee retirement programs. The market will have to wait and see how those come out. And now we have this upheaval in the AI arena because of DeepSeek, the small Chinese startup. So there are a whole lot of uncertainties, and that's going to keep the Fed unchanged.
And on top of that, the Fed already cut interest rates by a full percentage point if you go September through December. And that first half a percentage point cut was designed to protect the labor market, which looked rather precarious last fall, but appears to have recovered since then.
Exactly. Very good point. The economy's in good shape, so that gives the Fed yet another reason to be cautious in any policy changes in the direction of lower interest rates. So I think it's just a wait-and-see attitude on the part of Fed policymakers that'll continue for a while.
How does the calculus in what the Fed is trying to do right now in, you know, bring interest rates? Well, first off, do they want interest rates to remain restrictive relative to the economy?
Very good question. I was just looking at that. The Fed's aiming at neutral, which is part of the question you're asking. When did they get to a point where they're no longer restrictive? The Fed right now is looking at 2.9%, something below the current level. But my view is that that neutral level may be higher, maybe 3.5% to 3.75%. So they may not be too far from neutral. And that could be another reason why the Fed will show more caution in any rate cuts.
David Jones, Chairman, DMJ Advisors in Denver, Colorado, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. The Fed rate cut decision will hit around 1 o'clock this afternoon, and then you will have the news conference from Fed Chair Jerome Powell. So expect a lot of wild swings in the financial markets as that news conference unfolds. David, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, you can get an ad on the Super Bowl if you have at least $7 million to spend.
A program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The cost of an ad for this year's Super Bowl has hit a record $8 million. Let's talk about the value of that kind of huge investment with Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertair Group based in Chicago. Tim, thank you for joining us today. And Super Bowl spending and Super Bowl advertising is a look at parallel Earth, I like to say, Tim, one in which cable TV and the internet were never invented, and the four big networks reign supreme.
It's still kind of that way in an odd sort of perverse way, right? At the more choices that that media offers us today, and streaming and social and all those kinds of things, there is still something quite unique, actually probably even more unique, about a communal event like the Super Bowl that aggregates an audience that that like no other programming really does in this day and age. It's live, it's an event, and the commercials are also an attraction, which is an odd thing to say about television. And it is perhaps the only communal event that brings massive audiences together like no other.
Now, we're talking about up to $8 million a piece. That is what some of the more expensive pieces of broadcast real estate are going for during the Super Bowl. But even though those are some eye-popping figures, that just goes towards the rights fee that Fox has to pay the NFL. So does the network make any money off of this?
Well, there's no question that an event like this is a marquee attraction, and that certainly generates interest in other properties that the rights holder that year might have. But you know, what you're referring to is really the cost, the media cost, the cost of the actual placement of the spot. So, for example, $8 million, some of those ads for the Fox broadcast this year will hit that range. If you divide that by roughly 120 million viewers expected to watch, that's a relatively efficient cost. That's about $67 or so to reach 1,000 people, which is kind of the nomenclature of advertising. But yes, in addition to that media cost, which is relatively inexpensive if you think about just the sheer cost of reaching that many people, there's also the production costs, which tend to be higher because they tend to be bigger production values. And frankly, now, as we see in the last number of years, promotional and PR and teasers and all kinds of other campaigns in the lead up to the game, where people are actually finding the commercials ahead of time and the pomp and circumstance precedes the game, not just during the game.
Now, there are some things, I mean, a lot of this is what I like to call old television thinking. If you know who Fred Silverman is, I mean, he was kind of the pioneer of using the schedule to promote other programs when he was running the big three networks in the 70s. And the show after the Super Bowl, that was kind of a launch pad for some series. I mean, the most famous one being the A-Team 40 years ago, which ran after the Super Bowl, which ran on NBC that year. Is that still primetime real estate for primetime programming? Do you still get a big boost out of having that post-Super Bowl time slot?
Yeah, that flow, right, is very much a component of the traditional linear television environment, which dominated in decades past. But there is still there's still a drafting effect. There's no question, because when you've got that many people, 120 million or so, watching till the end of the game, even if the game's kind of a blowout, you're still talking at least in excess of 100 million people. There's just the dissipation of that audience after the game or during the post game. There's still lots, tens of millions of people still there, and it's just really convenient to still watch what's whatever is being shown after the game. And that's a big audience just by default.
Obviously, the Super Bowl is a spectacle regardless of whatever, regardless of the teams that are playing in it. But I would imagine the executive suites at Fox, they are no doubt thrilled that once again, the army of Swifties will be tuning into the Super Bowl as well because of Travis Kelce's presence in it.
Perhaps. I do think there's some hangover, though, that the Chiefs all of a sudden are becoming a little less followed, perhaps because they're so dominant over the last couple of years. So we'll see. We'll see what effect this game will have on that effect.
Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertair Group in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today to talk about Super Bowl advertising. Coming up next, Advocate Healthcare is closing its clinics at Walgreens stores in Illinois.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Advocate Healthcare is planning to close all 47 of its Illinois Walgreens clinics effective February 6th. Let's find out why from Bruce Jabson, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. Bruce, thank you for joining us today. And we have gone in-depth on this program before about some of the challenges that Walgreens is facing and how it's trying to rethink the store and the pharmacy at the same time. So is Advocate closing these clinics part of that reorientation, and who made the first move?
Well, in this case, Advocate took over these clinics when Walgreens has been trying to figure out retail healthcare now for a decade, which we have documentation on that because at Walgreens was not able to make these health clinics inside their stores work back in 2016. So Advocate took them over and has been running them. And of course, we now know, Walgreens is closing stores and so forth and so on. I'm sure that maybe it played into the fact that maybe there's not quite the foot traffic or whatever. But in Advocate's case, they were brief and didn't really get into it. But we do know they're redirecting resources to areas where there's underserved and more medical need with their $1 billion investment on the south side, where they're going to build a new hospital and invest, where the life expectancy is, there's a 30-year difference, that big announcement that they had about a month ago that didn't get much coverage in town, but it is a big deal. Now, more broadly, on the retail front, retailers are trying to figure it out. I mean, Amazon, I just wrote today, they just partnered with a health system in New York where their Amazon One medical clinics will do the primary care, and then they will refer to the more specialized centers. This is what Advocate tried to do with Walgreens over the last 9-10 years, but clearly that wasn't, maybe it worked out for several years, but not really working out to their benefit as we speak. So it's really interesting. We know that Walgreens invested in VillageMD, the local company here, with putting doctor practices attached to Walgreens. That didn't work. I think that people like retail healthcare. It's just, can these entities getting involved make enough money to keep it going and keep patients interested? I think with the onset of virtual care and you can see your doctor in front of your face on your iPhone, that plays into it as well. So I think it's just something that people do like, but they have to figure out a way to make money on it.
When this is all said and done, what will the Walgreens store of the future look like? Or will it even be a store? Will it be just simply a pharmacy that sells stuff that you can't get in the mail?
Well, I think that's what we're trying to figure out here and what they're trying to figure out. I do think that one of Walgreens' issues is they have a lot of long-term leases and they own a lot of these stores and spaces. So that's why you're seeing some of the shuttering. I do think that they're going to be experimenting with some new models where what they have in the store might be more focused on higher margin things like specialty pharmacy, vaccines. During the pandemic, we couldn't have done it without Walgreens or CVS. That's where people got their vaccines and continue to get more vaccines. And they're experimenting with this whole idea of pharmacists prescribing things. Let's say you go in and you find out you have COVID, and then they can give you a prescription for Paxlovid right there on the spot. You wouldn't have been able to do that 4 or 5 years ago, but you can do that now. So it's a work in progress. As you always say at WBBM, stay tuned.
Bruce Jabson, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. Stay tuned. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, the latest on changes to Social Security.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. There's breaking news from Washington regarding the Trump administration plan to freeze federal aid. President Trump's controversial choice for health secretary, asked about his view on vaccines by a Senate panel. Personal Finance Wednesday tracking the latest changes in Social Security. We'll also look at the historical impact of the Super Bowl on financial markets. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 39 points. NASDAQ down 146 and the S&P 500 down 24. We have 43 degrees right now in Chicago under partly sunny skies at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour.
Breaking news from News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
And there's a new development in the back-and-forth battle over President Trump's plan to freeze all federal aid spending. The White House Budget Office just rescinded that order, which had cut off access to Medicaid portals here in Illinois and in several other states. A judge put the order on hold after lawsuits were filed yesterday afternoon. There was a sigh of relief for nonprofits across the country that rely on that federal funding. Now the Trump administration is backing off the plan, at least for now. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. facing tough questioning at his confirmation hearing on Capitol Hill today. President Trump's pick for Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services is being asked about his views on topics including vaccines.
All of my kids are vaccinated. I've written many books on vaccines. My first book in 2014, the first line of it is I am not anti-vaccine, and the last line is I am not anti-vaccine.
Observers note that Kennedy Jr. has struggled to answer questions about how he would reform Medicaid or Medicare. It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. Markets are lower today. Joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. Find him online, horizoninvestment.com. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. And is this just a typical case of pre-Fed policy meeting, pre-Fed statement hedging?
Yes, and I'll throw another pre in there. Pre some substantial earnings coming out from pretty prominent companies here over the next 5 days. So you've got a market that's kind of factoring all those things in. And then also what we saw, you know, a couple of days ago with the whole DeepSeek issue concerning AI, and you get kind of markets like this intermixed.
Now, when the Fed policy meeting wraps up today, the interest rate announcement will come around 1 o'clock this afternoon, and all the prognostications and indications suggest that the Fed is going to stand pat this month. They will not raise interest rates. They will not lower them either. But all the action, all the interest will be on the news conference. And what Chairman Powell has to say, not only about the fight against inflation, but against the economy, and outside of the typical data-dependent caveats, what can we expect?
Well, I think you're going to get kind of we're still evaluating the data going forward. The economy and the numbers coming out are still pretty good, and I think they're taking it into account. And I think juxtapose that with the labor market, which is still fine, showing maybe a little signs of a slowdown. But I'm not expecting them to really drive a stake in the ground in terms of what they're going to do. I think they're going to continue to say, listen, we're going to look at the data look at the economy, look at what's going on in the labor market and take it from there. I don't anticipate you're going to see, more than two potential drops this year, unless obviously the economy really starts to run into problems.
Some of the tech heavyweights will report after the bell. What are sort of the big earnings reports that we can see this week?
Well, you're going to see Microsoft after the bell today. I believe you're going to see later this week and over the next 5 days or so. Usually you're going to have Alphabet in there. You're going to have Meta. You're going to have Apple. And so, some real prominent members of the Magnificent Seven are going to be reporting here over the next week to 2 weeks, and people are going to be watching those, especially the companies that are really tied to AI, to see especially what their capital spending plans are. And that's been the big issue for those companies. I mean, they're spending lots and lots and lots and lots of money, and people are wondering if the news we saw here recently is going to impact that spending going forward.
The one thing that always kind of jumps out at me about some of these analyst calls during earnings reports is that the CEOs are not actually getting like Sam Donaldson level grilling from the analysts on the phone. It's a lot of like, okay, all right, well, that sounds good. So how are these companies that have a great deal of AI spending and exposure, how are they going to answer the DeepSeek questions when we don't really know a whole lot about this thing in the first place?
Yeah, and I think that's it. I think they're going to probably take the approach of looking more long term. That, hey, the DeepSeek, this news is great for AI in general, but you're still going to have to spend a lot of money to keep up and build better and better models. And so I see an acknowledgement, them acknowledging obviously what's going on, but I also think the arms race is going to continue here, and those companies are going to continue to spend, quite frankly.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. Find him online at horizoninvestment.com. Thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, looking at the important changes to Social Security that are being implemented this year.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Changes in Social Security are raising questions about eligibility, benefits, and the long-term impact on recipients. We're joined by Shane Gore, partner and certified financial planner at Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle. Find him online at preparemyretirement.com. Shane, thank you for joining us today. Now, every year, Social Security changes. It changes to reflect current economic conditions, the cost of living, and all sorts of different factors. So changes in Social Security is not necessarily a new and shocking thing, but what are some of the changes that Social Security recipients or those who are close to eligibility could expect in 2025?
Great question, Rob. So just a few weeks ago, actually, there was something signed into law called the Social Security Fairness Act, which sounds all fine and good, but it's important to understand how that works and who might have been affected by it previously versus who is now. So Social Security benefits are determined by the income you earn and pay Social Security taxes on. So if you work for a private company, you pay Social Security taxes on all your income, so your Social Security benefit is based on all that income. Some people, though, are government employees or public sector workers that don't pay into Social Security, which means that many of them receive a pension instead of Social Security. So again, that's not complicated. They're just getting a pension instead of it. The problem is that some people did both. Some people might have spent some time working privately where they paid into it and some time in the public sector where they didn't. Maybe they got a corporate job for a few years and then went on to become a government employee, or maybe they were a firefighter and also worked part-time in the private sector. In situations where someone had both types of income,
the Social Security benefit that they would have been entitled to from the private sector was usually reduced or sometimes eliminated altogether. So even though they did the work and paid the taxes on that income, they didn't get the benefit of the Social Security benefit associated with that. So obviously people in that situation didn't find that fair. So this Fairness Act, again, it was just signed into law a few weeks ago, eliminates those provisions so that people who were kind of working both sides privately and publicly they no longer have a reduction or elimination of those Social Security benefits.
Now, what does this mean for someone who was impacted by this? How do they make sure that the law finally does apply to them? I'm guessing they're calling you for advice. And then what does this mean for the Social Security system as a whole?
Great question. So for the Social Security system as a whole, this means, now, it's no secret, the Social Security system as a whole is not in amazing shape. And this is great for people who, you know, were not getting credit and not getting benefit for the income they were earning in the private sector if they also worked publicly. But what it does mean is Social Security is now paying out more money on an annual basis. And so because it is paying out more money, it doesn't have a positive impact long-term for Social Security. Now, that's not the only issue Social Security is facing, trust me on that, but it does mean the system itself is paying more money over this period of time, which means there's less money available for the future for Social Security down the road.
And then if you fall into that category, I mean, let's say, for example, you were a government employee and you were drawing a government pension, but you also had private sector experience, or you were getting railroad retirement and then you have private sector experience outside of the business, and you want to make sure that you are in compliance, or at least you're getting the stuff that you're now owed under this law. How do you confirm that?
Best way to do that is especially if it's a situation where you're already receiving a reduced benefit or no benefit at all, you'll want to go ahead and refile for your benefits right away. You can go to ssa.gov. That's the official Social Security website, and you can do that there. We, of course, have a lot of clients that are reaching out to us to help kind of walk them through that process and figure out if it applies to them or not. But that's the first step that I would go to.
And then lastly, is this retroactive?
It is. It's retroactive starting to the beginning of January 2024. So if you were entitled to benefits and they were either reduced last year or eliminated altogether, you will be able to get that back retroactively. So I would strongly encourage you, if that was you, if that happened to somebody listening here, to start that process right away. There's going to be a lot of people applying for it. Social Security does not move quickly, so getting the ball rolling on that will help ensure that you get the money that you're entitled to.
Shane Gornick, partner and certified financial planner at Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle. Find him online, preparemyretirement.com. Thank you for joining us today.
It's lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The so-called Super Bowl predictor signals a bullish market if the Eagles win and a bearish market if the Chiefs prevail. Our guest has crunched the numbers and has reached conclusions about its validity. We welcome in Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, thank you for joining us today. Normally, correlation does not equal causation, Mark, but this segment asks the question, what if it did?
Well, you stated it quite right in your introduction. The interesting thing here is that even if the correlation were causation, the correlation, in fact, moves just the opposite direction of what everyone thinks it does who are followers of the Super Bowl indicator. It turns out historically, when that indicator has been bearish, the market's actually done better than in years when it's supposed to be bullish. So even if it were somehow related in a causal way, which of course it isn't, it would still move in just the opposite way that people think it does.
And this is tied to whether the NFC or the AFC team wins. And what's the general gist of the Super Bowl indicator? What does it tell you?
Well, it tells you absolutely nothing. I mean, there's no theory. There's no theory behind it. I mean, the only reason that it's worth you and I talking about it is because so many people pay attention to it. So I always worry that by even writing about it, I'm giving it too much attention. But the fact is that a lot of people do pay attention to these things and never stop to ask why would the winner of the, you know, the league from which the winner of the Super Bowl comes would have anything to do with the stock market. But there you are.
Now, we had, this is a rematch of the Super Bowl from 2023, and 2 years ago, the Chiefs beat the Eagles 38-35, and did this pattern show up in 2023?
Absolutely not. The Chiefs, if a Chiefs win, should have been a bearish omen for the market, and 2023 was a very good year for the stock market, if we recall.
So I guess the purpose of this conversation is to give you something to talk about during those awkward silences over the chili table or when you're getting some more appetizers during the game a week from Sunday. You can just say, hey, did you know there's a little bit of a correlation between whether the AFC or the NFC team wins? And I think these are fun jumping off points for discussion, Mark, because you're going back like over a century of history as far as the financial markets are concerned, and now you have the Super Bowl as an institution is nearly 60 years old, so it seems like the sample sizes are large enough to see if there's something there.
Right. There is enough data to see if there was something there. The fact is that when you do look to see if something's there, nothing is there. So it's one of those things that it's just perhaps the broader issue here is that people are always trying to draw correlations and tell us stories. Just like Rudyard Kipling, he had a story about how the leopard got his spots and so forth. It's sort of fun, but it has no reality.
Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington.